I want to welcome everybody today to Guthrie, Oklahoma. It's a beautiful day in Guthrie. We're at the Pink Buckle Fraternity at the Lazy E, and we are here with Dina Kirkpatrick to talk about updates in her life. And she's got a very exciting and amazing program, clinics, direction she's going in her life. She's going to talk to us a little bit more about it, and we're going to go right to Dina. Hello, Dina. Thank you for coming today. I'm so grateful you took the time to visit with us.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, and I think we need to say that we're here at the Fraternity Derby and the Open, because the Open 4D people, that's where they're the bulk of our industry. They don't get enough attention.
I'm so glad you say that.
That's where the money comes from.
The spotlight is always on those amazing horses.
And running. Amazing trainers and all that kind of stuff, but that's true. But like in the fashion industry, Vogue is a tiny piece of the fashion industry. The rest of it's Walmart and Target. But I'm not comparing as far as like that, but the bulk of our industry, the bulk of our industry is these people in the open. And so, yeah, I mean, we just have to give them credit in that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I just want to. And the older I get, the more I'm riding fewer fraternity horses, and I want to keep my horses to get to go to the open. So, hey, mm-hmm. I like that we have it.
I wanted to introduce you like the amazing Dina Kirkpatrick and listenless, but I know if I did that, you wouldn't come here.
That's
so
correct,
if anybody needs to know more,
amazing.
Google Dina Kirkpatrick, you'll find out. But Dina, did you get your start in fraternities, rodeos, open? Weren't you a rodeo?
When I was a kid, I had a father my grandfather raised thoroughbreds, and my dad was a self-trained team roper. He was at 25 when he trained himself to team rope, and he felt handicapped, so he only rode racehorses for his roping. So I've always ridden racehorses. So, like, Dad went to the BFI back when it was invitational on an own son and Nativo, which is a thoroughbred, out of an own daughter, Sugar Bars. But anyway, so I grew up like that, and he never claimed to be any kind of a special horseman. But I'm telling you, he mounted us beautifully. Now, I will say my first horse cost a whopping $200 and didn't have papers. And I will say there's a chance he still is the best horse I've ever swung a leg over. He ran 19s in the polls every time. And there was only one open horse in the pro world that I couldn't outrun at those invitational things. And it was Gail Petska's horse named Dobry. I remember that was kind of like, and I was a kid, you know. I was 12 years old, and I was like, oh, I can't outrun that horse. But, you know, Jimmy Gibbs had her famous horse and all that, and I would outrun those girls at those invitational team roping barrel race things. But anyway, so I was blessed as a kid to have really good horses. I mean, you know, my sister Terry George.
Terry's,
you know, both
amazing.
Of us, Terry, mine, her horse cost more than mine, but what didn't come out quite as good as mine and that. So, like, I was a little bit more blessed as far as that goes. I couldn't ride her horse across the street, and she could win on it. But anyway, but we did grow up in a wonderful family where our dad kept horses under us, and he could pick one like nobody. I mean, when I did do a fraternity, like we did the junior rodeos, and then I was academically inclined. And so when I was in high school, I did some school sports and just school. And I actually went to college on an academic presidential scholarship, and I didn't rodeo in college. So I had taken a break. When I got out and got married, I wanted to, you know, I mean, I never didn't ride. But anyway, so the first horse that I took with me when I got married was an own son of Go Man Go, named Go Little Orphan, that Dad had picked up somewhere and let me have him, and I trained him. I did a terrible job, but I went to the first, somebody, he was 5 years old, and somebody said, you need to go to the Derby in Abilene. And back then, that was the first fraternity, and it was a big deal. And I was like, you know, what is a Derby? I didn't even know what they were. And I went, I got entered. Some friends told me how to get entered. I went, and I won it. And back then, James Ward and the Urys were big, and he was winning it before I ran. And it was so, I think back about those days, because people came and said, oh my gosh, where'd you get your horse? Because nobody knew me from Adam. And I was like, well, from home, I trained him. I didn't know people bought horses that were trained. the world I lived in, you did it yourself, you know. But anyway, so
we're
that's
talking New Mexico.
New Mexico, yeah. Of course, that's a whole story. We could talk about my past for a long, long time because, you know, we had to, Dad was like, if I'm taking you to that rodeo, you're going to rope, tie goats, which I hated, and run barrels and poles and everything. But anyway, so I was very blessed horse-wise, and I was at, I mean, I never had a doll unless a horse came with it. I have been a horse lover since I was a little bitty kid. I just have been obsessed with them. But anyway, so that, and I was blessed to get to have them too when I was a kid. But anyway, so that's my little background.
Do you credit your father with your knowledge of pedigrees?
I credit my father with that, but I credit my father with the fact that what he was attracted to was a horse with a big shoulder that could reach and pull, and he would say, they can drag that rear end.
Interesting.
And so I still, to this day, I look at the shoulder of a horse first. Shoulder first, and I look at their eyes. You know, you got to look into their souls through their eyes. But anyway, yeah, I'm obsessed with the shoulder, and I will say the greatest horses I've had big shoulders. And I will say, too, Dad has passed away now, but when I was on a rodeo trip, and I needed a place to stay, and some people told me about the Jarvises in Spanish Fork, and I was in Salt Lake, and so that's where I went, and they said, well, they'll want to show you their horses. They got a stud, and I was like, okay, people do that. And when I saw the goodbye lane, all I could think about was, this is what my dad thinks all horses should look like, which is why I went back probably a month later and got two of them. And I was silly and sold one, which actually the girl's here with it. My sister helped her with it. But anyway, sold one and kept the other. The one I kept was Gracie's Lane. And so I get choked up talking about these horses. But anyway, so really, she's the greatest horse I've ever had. But, I mean, I've been so blessed by God with horses. But anyway, but I do credit my dad for that.
If you've been listening and you have Googled Dina and some of the horses that she's owned, that she's trained, that she's
and lots of them that I didn't own.
Really remarkable. And, you know, like your connection with Martha. When Lindsay Sears was winning the world, of course you...
I would credit my dad with that mare, too, because...
I knew that. Tell me that.
So okay. I had won the BFA on Willie Nickbar. He was by Dr. Nickbar. And the Davidsons and Susie Davidoff owned him. But anyway, I had won that. The year before Willie Nickbar, I had an own son of Martha Six Moons named Chicago Moon Express, who was the top Texas futurity horse, and I did win a lot on him. He was beautiful, belonged to Donna Bailey. But anyway, a friend of ours from New Mexico that was a horse shearer, he called my dad, and, you know, people would read the paper back then because we didn't have Facebook. Thank goodness. I hate that anyway. But anyway... called my dad and said, hey, I got a client that's going out of the racehorse business, and he's got some Martha Six Moons, and he wants to sell them. And, of course, I was like, okay, how far back on the papers are they, you know? But the man owned a full sister to Martha Six Moons, and she was 10 years old. And my dad said, we're going to go look at that. The little man was going out of the business, and he made us buy her and all three of the babies of hers that were on the ground, which was a 3-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 1-year-old. The 3-year-old was a mare that had hurt her hip a little bit, and I ended up selling her to my sister Terry, who ended up selling her, and she's produced some runners, some barrel horses down there in South Texas. The other two were gelded them. They were by some studs named Straight to the Bank that I didn't even like. I sold them. One of them, one of those babies, after Martha got in the newspaper, some people from the Northeast, I don't know if they're from Rhode Island, some small state in the Northeast, contacted me to tell me that they jumped on it and that it was the number one barrel horse in that state. So it's a great line. Female line of horses. She said, I know it's not saying much because of where I live. But anyway, one of those geldings had made a jumping horse and dressage and barrel horse. But anyway, I sold that mare to clients, which was Mona Ham.
Mona Ham.
With Timona. And they were like, well, you know, and I'm like, you know, we breed, they're bred her to Dr. Nickbar because, I mean, hey, I'm no breeding genius, but the only two things on my place that were the best, let's just breed her to Dr. Nickbar, you know.
You picked that cross out.
So, yeah, and they did it for me.
They did it for you.
Then they got divorced, and I bought Martha for $2,000.
Back at Shed. the Judd
at
Little
the Judd
Sale.
Little Sale. She was the number two horse in the sale. And anyway, and
she looked like nothing. I still have that sale
catalog.
Yeah, she
just looked like a sorrel filly, and you know, kind of high in the front end. But anyway, make long story short, and that's a whole nother story that takes care of itself down the road. Yep. But back to my dad. If it weren't for my dad, I'd have never driven with him to New Mexico, and he looked at them with me, and he partnered with me on them. I wouldn't have been able to do it by myself, but anyway.
And so, Martha actually has no Martha Six Moons on her papers.
Her mother is a full sister.
But the mother is the full sister.
To Martha Six Moons himself.
Right.
Right.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so yeah. There was another full sister that was a year older, so the stud, Martha Six Moons, he had a filly that was a mare that was a year older and one that was a year younger. So this was the younger mare. And her name was Baby Blue Jeans. So anyway. And I will say on the Martha Six Moons coming up from Things from the Past, I loved those horses. Susan Clapp won more on Martha Six Moons than I did, but I did love them. I loved them. They were a huge part of my life. And I will say I'm so attracted to... I mean, of course, if I could have every Goodbye Lane, he's my top favorite thing right now. And I have De Niro, and I've bred Kate to De Niro. But anyway, I love him. But I love that Martha Six Moons bred Chic that Macaulay has. Mm-hmm. And he looks Martha Six Moons, and his mother is named Tiny Martha Jean. Anyway, that's a whole other story about breeding.
Oh,
but if I were a younger person, I'd be breeding Gracie to and wish I could ride it, but now I probably won't be able to ride it, so I don't know what I'm going to do. But anyway.
I don't know. 9 years ago, you told me breed everything you had to Goodbye Lane.
Yes. Oh, yeah. He's amazing.
A lot of amazing stallions
user,
out there, though.
We have so many. We do. We are at a place in the barrel horse world that, you just dream about getting here.
Did you ever believe it would get to this?
I never did. Number one, I've spent my whole life in cow horse world where I live and racehorse world where I grew up being low man on the totem pole. You know, people kind of wanted to laugh at you for being a barrel racer. You know, no horsemanship. And then you go to the Ridosa sale back when I got Kate and them, they'd spit on you for trying to buy it for a barrel horse. Now they're like, hey, come look at what we have. I just love it. It's like definitely has changed. But anyway, it's a big, big difference.
Your pedigree, Dina Kirkpatrick's pedigree of being a breeder and a trainer.
I really don't get to, take credit in the breeding department. I mean, I've been so blessed, and I will say I have studied barrel racing every way that it's been done. I study it. I have a huge interest in horsemanship because it makes this easy for the horse. So I have a huge interest in that. Now, I always say about barrel racing, it's the one event that there's no real right and wrong way to do it. I mean, you've seen every kind of horse, every kind of riding. Some of them you can't lope a circle on, but they can run. You know, I mean, there's every kind of do it. But my goal is to help. When I do a clinic, my actual goal, I don't want to say, look, this is my way or the highway. I hate it if people say, well, this is what works for me, and they don't say why. You need to know why. You can't teach what you don't know why. Now, that's an Ian Francis saying. If you don't know why, you can't teach it. Well, if you don't know why you're doing it, you can't teach it to your horse either. But anyway, so my goal as a clinician is basically to help people mentally and physically. And I'm talking mentally on the horse, mentally on the person, physically on the horse, physically on the person, how to help them move their body and their feet in a way that this comes easy to them, which basically... They're four-legged horses. I don't care if they're going down the cutting pen or going to run out here and turn that barrel. Some things have to be in the same place or it doesn't work. So I just like to help people understand better the effect that they're having on their horse and how to help him in a way that's positive. That's my goal. So, you know, they're great. They learn from repetition, too, and so there's horses that are trained from just running through the pattern a jillion times, and some of them just take to it, and I don't suppose you have to know anything about it when that happens. But anyway, I choose to do it the other way.
Do you have a minute to talk about the influence that Sealy
Ray? Oh, yeah, Sealy. When I was younger, I got that beginner's luck with that Go Man Go.
Right, and then whoever young people are listening, if they don't know who Celia is,
you need to look her up.
Whitcomb Ray, Google her.
Celia was born into a home. Milo Whitcomb, he's in the legend books. He and Walter Merrick were friends, and they brought three bars to the quarter horse industry. He had the first All-American champion. They had cutting horses. They did halter, cutting, and barrel racing on their same horse. Anyway, she grew up in a home where horsemanship was just part of her life. She didn't have to think about it. But anyway, when I had beginner's luck, and when that left me, which happens pretty quickly, I began to study trainers, and I became obsessed with her because her horses were fat, happy, correct, and looked very correct and looked very easy for them, and it looked like she barely had anything on her head and was sitting in the middle and not moving her pinky finger. So I started stalking her just a little bit.
How did you stalk her?
Well, I watched a lot, and then I ended up, the one horse I've bought in my life, my father-in-law bought her for me, was a mare, the one that I didn't train, was a mare that Celie had in her barn, and her name was Color Me Magnolia. And anyway, that's a whole nother story of its own. I actually have written stories about Maggie because of her influence in my life. But anyway, that's how I bought that mare, even though my vet said not to. But anyway, so
why'd your vet say not to?
Because her hawks were terrible.
Okay.
Her hawks were terrible. he said her hawks had been terrible from the day somebody threw a saddle on her at the age of two. Yeah. But anyway, so by wonder anyway, and the guy that owned her. Oh, why am I forgetting his name? He's so nice. He had other Magnolia bars. Anyway, he was so nice. He took money off, and he let me keep her for 30 days and treat her. And it was so weird thinking back about it, because my vet said, well, treat her for 30 days. Well, no, I couldn't even ride her in the 30 days. I don't know why, but Steve Mullins owned her. Okay. And he let me do that, and he took a little money off and everything. And my father-in-law bought her, and Celie and I had been blessed, but I had learned, I knew better than to not go to Celie. She's the one that had the mare. So she let me come ride with her every 2 weeks. And so that's how we became. And we became close friends, which the thing about horses and what I believe about them, they're gifts from God. They're gifts from God for a reason other than getting your name in the paper. They're a gift from God for a platform or an avenue to other people that you can help or be a part of their lives, or they can help you, whichever way. And on that note, Celie got cancer and died, and I am sort of her daughter's surrogate mother. Celie, Mary Cecilia. Her name's Mary Cecilia. And she has hands like her mother, Mary Cecilia Tharp, and she's, you know, she's a lovely person, and I am, they're a big part of our life. And so Maggie.
Didn't Mary Cecilia married Ella Master's grandson, Spud? We knew him as Spud.
Spud. His name is Spud Tharp. Yeah,
Spud Tharp. Spud. Ella
and they're
was a good
they're
friend,
happily married and got two beautiful girls. Anyway, they're like family. They're like family members.
And so they still call him Spud.
Yep, they still call him Spud. Yeah, and I call Cece Cece, but they call her Mary Cecilia. I still can't get. We called her Cece because that's what Celie called her. But anyway, Maggie was. You know, I mean, you think back about that. You know, you don't realize where it's going to take you. But on the note of that, Celie and I became super close. I mean, we traveled together when she got cancer. My mom kept my oldest daughter when she was a baby, and I would go help Celie for 2 weeks or drive her or take Bugsy to the vet. And anyway, it was long, long, long. That's a whole nother story. But anyway, that's how. But I learned so much from Celie just from being with her and picking her brain. Mm-hmm. And I still, there are some great riders. There's still in my book, she had hands of gold. She could be there for a horse like nobody's business. And so anyway, but that's how, and I learned a lot from her. And when her cancer came, she sent me her group of horses. She cleaned it. She cleared it with her clients. And she sent me her group of horses. There were four of them that she had started. They were kind of trotting the barrels is all, but she got sick that year. But anyway, one of them was hers, and me and her partnered on it. And one of them was Foals Classy Snazzy, and one of them was a little roan mare. But anyway, and so I was a nervous wreck to ride her horses. But anyway, but they weren't hers, but her clients' horses. But it worked out beautifully.
So Celie taught you your use of the inside rein.
Celie, yeah, and I will tell you, Celie would say, every time you touch the rein, you're losing time. You know, she was a real one-handed, and she sat so centered, just centered and and soft, and that, and yes, that's where I and the barrel to the hip, you know. And I, but you know, in all honesty, like when we talked, I'm an analyst of everything. I would ask her when we were driving to rodeos. I would ask her. We talked. I would ask her questions, you know. But when I ask her, okay, well, what do I do? This is what she said: just don't start the turn too early. That was all she told me. Sounds simple, but anyway, but yeah, so that was that story. But that's how I got with that. And then as far as like influences go, if I could have met Ian Francis when I was a younger person, I think back about horses, what their lives could have been like had I known Ian before. So I had those horses.
You said something to me many years ago, and by the way, I'm going to digress just a minute. Is he ever going to come back to the United States and do a clinic with you?
I don't know. He's had a little bit of health issues and that, and I don't know. I feel sad because he's, in my opinion, the world's greatest horseman. Yeah. He is the world's greatest. I don't care what anybody says. And I know I've been around him a lot, and I've ridden his horses he started, and that's a whole other story.
It's another story. Well, it sure is an honor to meet him. But you said something to me many years ago. He said to you, Dina, it's not what you're asking the horse that I am asking you to change, something to this effect. But do you have to ask it all right now?
I was riding one of my dad's. It was okay. So he was at my house, and I had a 3-year-old, and she was a full sister to the first to the Dash to Fame that's on my DVD cover. So she was a full sister to him, and she was a typical Dash to Fame filly. But anyway, was it her? Anyway, it was he was 3 years old, the colt, the horse I was riding. Anyway, and we were talking about literally like sitting and getting them, it was probably early 3-year old, getting them to, you know, get that hind leg and actually starting the start of a spin. I don't spin my barrel horses fast, but I do ask them to be able to move their front end around their back end. But anyway, we were doing different stuff with him, and I was like, well, but this. And he said, does it have to learn everything today? And
that's,
I was like,
great story.
Yeah, that's right. It doesn't have to learn everything today. So, and of course, that rings in my ears, you know. So when if I can get a little bit of progress, then I'm happy about that. And I've tried to learn not to try to teach them everything in one day. But
so
anyway.
Through the years, have you become more patient with the horse?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I'm so much more patient now than when I was a little kid. I was an impatient little brat. I mean, I broke toys that wouldn't do what I wanted. And I've been whipped for being impatient when I was little. But and then I was impatient. And I will say, I mean, I don't like talking about it, but I don't forget about issues I've had when I was too stupid to know what to do and let my temper get in the way. And I'm very patient now. I wasn't as a younger trainer. I was not patient. And now I'm patient. And I'm amazingly, and I know people that grew up with me or people that know me really well, they're like, oh yeah, I can't control my emotions around some people, but I can control my emotions when I'm around a horse, because if you don't, you pay a price, and so do they. And I'm hugely compassionate towards the feelings of a horse. Now, do they get to be my boss? No, except kind of Gracie thinks she is, but anyway, so that's a whole other story. But anyway, but I want them to respect me, but I have a huge amount of compassion toward if I'm making it where they can understand me, if my body's in a position that helps things be easy for them as opposed to me, my body getting in the way. But anyway, so yeah, I'm way more patient than I ever was as a younger person.
Your secret, you've trained so many. What is your secret, Dina? Is it the one rein? Is it getting to the hip?
I would say that if I were going to say, and hey, there's people that have won so much more than me and trained more horses than that, but I would say if I was gonna think about what I thought was the main thing that has helped, is that helping the horse, I call it his little happy spot, where his feet go in a place where the barrel never becomes an object that keeps him from moving forward, which barrel behind the rider's leg. And you know, because if the barrel's up by the horse's shoulder and he's trying to turn, when he tries to turn it, the barrel's in the way, he can't do it. So barrel behind the leg, and that's fairly simple sounding, But anyway, I would say that helping them put their feet in the place where they feel super comfortable doing it, they will hunt that spot for you. And I've never thought of myself as any kind of a good, like, hand rider. So I've always felt the need to train a horse. I'm gonna quote Kay Young. She used to say, I got to train a horse I can catch a ride on. I like the way that sounds, because that's what I've wanted to train a horse that can do most of it by himself and hope to goodness that I don't get in his way. So he has to be comfortable to want to hunt the space for you. So one of the things I tell people when I am talking about, you know, at a clinic or that, if people knew how to let a horse turn a barrel as opposed to feeling like they're going to make him turn a barrel, you couldn't fill a clinic. If you learned how to let them do it as opposed to making them do it.
I love that.
So anyway, but yeah, that's a whole nother ball of wax too.
So I could
talk forever. Yeah.
I could listen to Dina forever.
You're partial because we've known each other for a long time.
I am partial because
we're old.
We are. But when we're talking about age, there are some benefits to getting older.
Yeah.
We have lovely grandkids.
We have lovely grandkids and you just totally wish, and this is me and Ian were talking one day, and he's older than I am, but he was like, you know, you never quit learning. You better never quit learning. But you learn, you finally get a lot learned, and your body just can't do it anymore. Anyway, so that is a little bit, hey, that's a little bit depressing. I know a lot of people, and I was talking, people that have been around, and I was even talking to some of these people, and they were like, oh, I don't know who that is. And I was like, boy, am I ever getting old, because, you know, I remember this person who started this and the beginning of this, and anyway, so whatever, but.
Maybe I shouldn't go there, we might have to edit this out, but this was a couple years ago at Oklahoma City, and it was the qualifier for the American, and you were on Gracie Lane.
I think when I fell off?
You had just won the Derby, and I mean, Gracie.
I don't think I won the Derby, but I placed.
You tied. It was something like that.
Yeah, but anyway.
You come flying into that first burrow, I'm like, holy cow, just inhale it. And she's running to the second barrel, inhales it, and then something happened.
Yeah, I yarded off. That was the first time I ever let Gracie out of a lope to the first barrel. I thought, oh, she had been in the arena two times. She had placed twice, done really well. I thought, okay, I'm gonna leave her alone. And I let her run to it for the first time ever in her life. I will just say about Gracie, she has excess speed, more than I ever dreamed she would have, and I've never been on a horse that it came so easy for. But anyway, I did let her go that day, and first barrel was great, and I am telling you, she didn't trip, nothing happened. I just didn't make the corner. Centrifugal force. I just didn't make the corner. I broke my collarbone.
She was a fighter jet that night. It
yeah.
was the most unbelievable run that almost
yeah.
happened.
Yeah.
But we took you to OU.
Yeah, to the hospital. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I called my son's girlfriend, who's a trauma yeah. nurse, and they got you in.
Yeah, and hallelujah where we went. Talk about it. Because we went to OU, right?
Oh, yeah, downtown to
I'm anti-mask. And they didn't make me wear one.
Because
I was like,
they
I am
were
not going
warned.
In.
They yeah. were warned about you. And you went, and I have this from good sources, nurses that were there that told my son's girlfriend, but they said you went in there and told them what you had, what was wrong, how to treat it, and you were spot on.
He wanted to check my finger, but I was like, I'm fine. My finger's fine. I don't need to do anything about that. But anyway,
and
yeah.
And they said you were the most awesome patient.
Oh,
because
that's
you
fine.
Were not only tough, is bootleg. They're like, I don't need pain medicine. We got to get home and watch the NFR because it was like the 10th round.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And Jordan won, and we got you out of that hospital just yeah. in time
to watch that last NFR round.
And
right.
we're watching, we're huddled in my car and
yes.
the cell phone. And as soon as Haley tipped the barrel, do you remember this day?
Yeah.
Terry, you and I, it was this big.
And my sister was with us, yeah.
Yeah. But we were happy for Jordan.
Yeah,
and,
oh,
you
yeah.
know, also
I
being
do. We did make
Classic.
It out there. That yep. is, that was funny.
But you did get the world's best, toughest patient at OU.
Oh. Well, thanks to you guys, I really am so anti-mask. And, hey, going to the hospital, you're probably not going to get by with. They were so nice.
Yeah.
They didn't make me wear a mask. And he was the doctor I loved because I really hate I hate to go to the doctor. I hate it. I don't go. I'm terrible. But anyway, he was like, you could have surgery on that, but he said, it'll get well by itself. And I'm like, okay, good, thanks.
And you walked out just like, I'm done. Let's go. Let's go watch
it. It was great. They were great. And I'm so appreciative of you guys making the phone calls.
Legend. That's the stuff that legends. That's tough. That's cool. Okay, so then later on in the year, you had something else happen to you.
I had one run off with me at my house, and
now this one really scared me.
This scared me, and this scared me. I'll be honest. I've had a few accidents. I've been very blessed because, I mean, hey, horses, they're dangerous. I mean, bottom line, they're big, and things can happen, and we're going real fast and that. But and I do wear a helmet, and I know I love a cowboy hat. But we are the only speed horse event that doesn't wear helmets.
Right,
just bottom.
Right.
I've had to defend myself a few times. But anyway. But, and I'll put the helmet on even when I'm taking a colt into the round pen that doesn't lead very well. It might, you know, that light run you over.
Right,
But anyway, I had started wearing a helmet even though I hate the way I look in one. And I wear them at home on those horses. And I had a colt that ran off with me. I've never really had that happen. I live on a ranch. I don't have pins around my barrels. And we have cattle guards, the kind that break horses' legs. And he ran off with me and was running off. And headed right for the worst cattle guard we have. And I remember thinking, I'm going to have to bail. But how do you do that? And so I don't remember bailing, but I tried. I bailed, and I ended up getting knocked out. But anyway, I don't remember the bailing. But I did do it, and I got knocked out, and I woke up at the emergency room. And anyway, I was very fortunate. My helmet saved my life, for real. If I hadn't had a helmet on, there's no telling what would have happened. My helmet was cracked, and it was a fancy, nice, high-rated helmet.
Right.
Anyway, but so anyway, that was good in that. But anyway, yeah, but it spooked me because I don't know how I didn't know that horse had it in him. That's what I couldn't figure out. How did I not know that could happen? And, you know, you feel your instincts, you learn from experience. But anyway, for whatever reason, it spooked me a little bit, and I ended up selling one of my three-year-olds because he was not an old lady's horse. Jana Bean has him, though, and she loves him, and I'm thrilled with that.
Right.
But anyway, he's a good by lane. But I sold one of the colts that I had that year because I knew that I wouldn't be able to ride him, and he would go to waste. And I have two others that I had already, you know, they were going to probably be okay. But I was pretty – they're set back a little bit because for months after that – now, I wasn't scared of Gracie,
right?
You know, and that, but my young ones, it spooked me a little bit. So, and that's hard to get over.
Didn't you break some ribs?
Broke ribs and had a concussion.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, hey, it could have been worse. I was very fortunate. But
concussions are
the main thing that made me, the fact that I couldn't remember happened, don't know why it happened, that's what bothered me. I was thought, and my husband's like, didn't you try to pull him around? Because, you know, if you can't stop a horse, you pull one side of the rein. Surely I did try to do that, but I can't remember. So, you know, part of me was like, okay, are my instincts failing me? I mean, I am getting older, and things happen. This is a fact of life. But anyway, it did spook me. It spooked me for riding those young horses. It's been months getting past, or it's been a year now. Has it been more than a year? It's been a year.
Year and a half,
mm-hmm. Which I feel better now. But I will tell you, when I get, you know, when I don't know them very good, I'm very careful. I mean, I have a girl that comes named Jacqueline Ferris who does the groundwork so that they all know what that whip means and they can lunge and turn their feet around. So all of mine, I mean, I got 2 4-year-olds that I still do that with. Anyway, because I'm going to make sure I don't get bucked off or that I know what they're, you know, I'm not just... You just have to be more careful when you're my age.
Dina, you're just such an interesting person. Things that I know about Dina, you like Jimmy Choo shoes? Is that right?
I don't dress up. You know, COVID took dressing up away.
But you love
a long
good
time
shoes.
Ago. I
we
love.
Talk
yeah,
about
we did.
Shoes.
Yeah, but now it's Canada Goose tennis shoes.
Oh wow. Okay. See, this is because we're older now.
Yeah. Oh
but
yeah.
There was this thing.
Yeah.
What's the other shoe? Jimmy Choo. There was something else.
Yeah, Jimmy Choo's are beautiful, but they're not even all that comfortable. But I would say,
you like a good. A good
I like
purse,
a good,
designer,
and I like
a good
dress. You know, in the old days before COVID, you know, we dressed up. I really, and my kids are both in. They were both high into fashion, because that was the other love of our life, was they fashion, both did stints in New York and stuff like that. But anyway, so yeah, I don't wear Jimmy Choo's anymore. Yeah. But anyway, but I do like nice shoes.
If you were not a barrel racer, trainer, competitor, breeder, what would you have been?
I have no idea. What I was headed to college, what I did in college was accounting, and I was a straight-A student, and I was headed for, corporate America. You know, that was what I thought I just had to do. And in fact, I took a horse with me to college, but I didn't compete. I just love horses, so I did take one, but I didn't compete, and I was headed that direction, and I got married and started training racehorses at a nearby place and started training barrel horses, and I could be my high school's most likely to succeed failure, if you wanted to look at it academically. But anyway, so I don't know what I would have done, but I don't know. I have no idea what, you know.
Any regrets?
Yeah, I regret wasting the brain God gifted me with. I mean, from the family, I mean, my uncle graduated. He had a photographic memory, and my dad was excellent in math, and my grandmother on my mom's side, she didn't get to go because of money, but was invited to one of those big-time Eastern schools, and I did well in school. When I was a young person, I was smart, I've lost a lot of it. But you know, I part of me feels somewhat of a failure because I had a brain that could have taken me somewhere other than down the horse trail. But I do think it helps me. I analyze everything kind of to death in a way, but I do think it has helped me. But I will say this, too. I was able to homeschool my kids and take them with me. And I love horses. So that, and I married in, and I am blessed. I live in a place where I can have my own and space to have them. And, you know, I mean,
I wonder if that's a woman thing sometimes, that we all kind of feel like we've failed in some way.
Yeah, I know. Like, my mom was a housewife, but, oh, my gosh, how hard is that? You know, and it isn't. And I will say, the world we're living in where both people have to work, it's not what God had planned. You know, and I was blessed. My mom's job in life was to take care of us. And so we were well cared for in every way. I mean, even my mom didn't ride even, but like when Dad couldn't take us to the rodeos, my mom drove. But anyway, so yeah, I would say the one thing I do feel a little bit, that part of me, that because I was so obsessed with being the perfect student, that was all I thought about. And then I actually didn't do anything with that. So, you know, in a way, part of me is like, and I will say this, in the world we live in, I have been aggravated at being thought of as being a little bit less intelligent because I'm a horse trainer. And we have actually a lot of people in our industry. There's lawyers, doctors, there's a lot of people but you know, in a way, the people are kind of like, oh, you train horses? You know, they kind of, people that knew me in high school, you train horses? You know what I mean? So anyway, I suppose if I was going to say I have a little bit in the back of my mind, regret. But on the other hand, I didn't have to put my kids in daycare. Right. So you got to be, that's a blessing. So anyway, but yeah.
You've blessed this industry. We could talk and talk and talk.
Yeah, we could. I mean, I said I wasn't going to talk 10 minutes.
I know.
You're good. It's only 40.
Okay, oh my gosh. If we start talking politics, we're going to be in
trouble. Yeah, we better not do that.
We'll lose all, we'll lose credibility. We'll be in big trouble.
Yeah. You've got a good audience. You'll probably only lose about 3%.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, then we'll be tapped by the FBI. That'll be the next thing. They'll be monitoring. Yeah. You didn't wear a mask. Yeah. You don't believe in the vaccine. We'll be in trouble.
And I didn't wear one. I got.
I know. I knew that about you.
They called the cops on me at Duluth Trading in Lubbock, Texas. No joke. I went in there because Meg was with me, and she gets mortified sometimes in public. But anyway, if I do that, but I was like, I went in. I thought, you know what? It's a free country. That's not a law. And I went in, and they came, and they tried to put me one on me, and I was like, no, I'm not wearing that. And so then she came and brought me one of those shields, and I said, I'm not wearing that either. Look at your fingerprints all over that thing. Anyway, and I said, you know you're breathing your own carbon dioxide, don't you? But anyway, she's like, well, I'm going to have to call the police. And I said, knock yourself out. And so she did. And so when
she knocked herself out?
No. She called the police. Oh. Anyway, so when she did, I leaned over when she was telling them where she was. I leaned over and said, "Mr. Policeman, it's a mask emergency. You better hurry." Anyway, I will say that I left, you know, but I was so.
Oh, that's great.
The problem with that is people, and I probably said this to the young girl. Granted, I know it's corporate America trying to make you do that, but bottom line, I can order this crap at home and you don't have a job.
Right.
Can order this stuff and there's no need for a brick and mortar building. So yeah, think twice about that. But anyway, let's don't talk about that stuff too, because I'm very opinion. But anyway.
And now we're looking back and we're laughing at it.
Oh gosh. And yet they're trying to never mind.
They're trying to do it again.
They're trying to do it again.
Yeah. Trying to do it again.
It's not about masks. It's not about health.
No, it's about control. Yeah, we are.
We're gonna get in trouble.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
So all right. So Dina, you are doing something called the Good Ground Ministries.
And, okay, let me talk about the Good Ground Ministries for sure. Kathy Hollibaugh is my good friend. She is an amazing Christian girl that I believe is so close to God. Nobody's perfect, and she doesn't even think it, but I call her. My parents are dead, and my grandmother's dead. I have an aunt, too, that I call, and I have, you know, when I think, okay, what do you think God means about this? But anyway, but Kathy is an amazing person, and she's just amazing. And she's a barrel racer, too. And she's had some hardships, and she's written a couple of books. And it was her idea. She named it Good Ground, which I think is a genius idea.
I love it.
And they're my favorite clinics. And we do them cheaper. And I just, you know, if people come, we do teach barrel racing, and we do lots of comparison. It's amazing, your horse training and your relationship with your horse, how it can kind of correlate with your relationship with God and with Jesus.
What is the goal of Good Ground?
Well, I think I would need to let her say what the goal of Good Ground is.
We can call her up.
Her goal, we probably could call her up. Yeah. Her goal for Good Ground would be, well, let's do call her up. We can actually do that.
Give me your phone number.
You know what?
I got her phone number.
Let's just take a break right here.
Okay.
And let's get a hold of her. Let's get her on here. We were going to do this in Stephenville this week, but then I have a veteran with my veteran equestrian program, so I can't do that. So let's get her on. Let's take a break, and let's get her on.
Hello.
Hi,
Kathy.
You're on Barrel Talk Radio with Barrel Horse World and Dina Kirkpatrick.
Oh, awesome. Just what I love to do, talk. That's what I do the best.
Who are we talking to?
Kathy Hollibaugh. Okay, so the question
was... We're talking about you, Kathy.
Yeah, we're talking about you.
Okay.
The question was, Gail can ask it again.
Tell us your goal for the Good Ground Ministry.
How is my goal, or what is my
goal? Tell me what the goal is of your clinics that you're doing, your ministry with Dina Kirkpatrick.
Not with me, but just your Good Ground.
Your Good Ground. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, the Good Ground part was just... an idea I came up with just because of a lifetime of loving Jesus and loving a good barrel horse, and kind of loved the years that I got to do it, and just thinking about, you know, how much we talk about good ground and what constitutes good ground for a barrel racer, and then which is basically a foundation, you know, that makes things right and good and safe and, you know, the best type of ground to run on, those kind of things. And then comparing that to the foundation of life, which there is none other foundation that's based on truth than Jesus and the Bible. And then the fun part is really how the two things correlate. There's so many things when you're talking about training barrel horses and the foundations that we use, to kind of how God trains and teaches and loves on us, you know, in our relationship with Him. So the idea was that I would bring someone like Dina in for the girls to come and do the barrel racing clinic and, you know, learn the foundations of barrel racing from someone like Dina. And then we talk about Jesus. And I think in the beginning I was thinking, you know, that maybe they would just come. I told her in the beginning, you know, I'm just using you, you know, we draw people in because they want to learn to train a barrel horse or learn about running barrels from the best. And then it might be you know, that they've never been a person that went to church or was raised hearing about Jesus and the foundations of a life based on Christ. And so they'll get the best of both worlds. You know, they come from both things. And it's really been a great concept. It's really been interesting how it ties together. So that was my thought in the beginning. And then Dina and I just, we'd known each other forever, but we're so on the same page as far as this concept goes, you know, and what we would love to do at this stage in our life. So anyway, we've just worked so well together and become such good friends and with the same thoughts and ideas, you know, about life today. So anyway, that was a whole lot of talk about a really small question that you asked me, but welcome to mine and Dina's life together.
We talked
a lot. So Kathy, you have a clinic coming up this coming week in Stephenville.
Yes.
And you still have spots open to audit. All the writing spots are gone.
True.
How, if someone's listening to this, they want to come to the clinic, you can go to Barrel Horse World. We've got your banners there. But your website, Good Ground Ministry, is that the place? Or can people who want to audit just show up?
Yes.
Okay.
You can just show up. We would like to know as soon as they know that they're coming. So because we furnish breakfast, lunch, and then a supper on Saturday night, so we like to know how many that we need to
feed.
That we're going to be feeding, yeah, and to put that together. But they absolutely can just show up. But even if they just let us know, the best thing to do is to go to goodgroundministries.com and fill out the application, because then we have a little welcome letter that goes out and kind of tells you some things about the clinic and a schedule and everything. So it's best to do that, and then that way we know how much food we're going to need and chairs.
Wasn't when you were trying to think of your idea for your thing, didn't you find Bible verses? So on the note of two, from Kathy's the key of this thing, but it's Bible-based. Bible-based.
Yes.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah, not religious-based. I really don't even like that word. It's Bible-based. But didn't you find the word ground, good ground? In the Bible, isn't there a lot of places where ground is, didn't you tell me once, ground is important?
There actually is, and when you look at some of the, like I have a daily Bible that I read that's the Message translation version, and it's taken the scripture of Hebrews 13:8, and it says Jesus Christ is the only good ground for life. And it just, you know, the way it interprets it, you know, but there are a lot of scriptures that do, and even the psalm about, you know, it kind of reminds me of the psalm about, you know, he pulled me up out of the muck and the mire, and being brought from dirt, us being taken down to the dirt, made from dirt, you know, it's just a lot of things like that as far as just, you know, literal ground. But the translations that are just correlations between building a life and building a barrel horse, you know, building the foundation of a barrel horse. There's just so much of it that correlates so beautifully that's just fascinating to, you know, when you really get to talk about it. But it's, as far as that, using that term, good ground, yes, that's for that verse, the one that's Jesus Christ is the same yesterday. What is it? Yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And he's the only good ground for life to build your life on. So anyway, yeah,
really great.
It is.
That's great. Kathy, thank you for letting us invade your Sunday afternoon and talk about the clinic. We're going to hang up here, and then I'll see you at one of these days.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks, Kathy.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. So honestly, like, we should put that first. That's the most important thing. That's more important than anything we've talked about. Anything we've talked about, that's more important.
It is to you.
That's a good note to end on.
Yeah,
well,
it is.
We have a couple more things that we want to talk about really quickly, because I know you got to go and get your horse warmed up. But talking about your run yesterday and coming.
It was awful.
And see, Dina, just the fact that you can say that and laugh about it.
I'm not really laughing. I kind of want to cry, but I mean, hey, what are you going to do? So, yeah.
When you've been here and won so much money at these Buckles and left, yes, last year was amazing. You had tremendous.
She was amazing last year.
And now, yeah. Now
she's an amazing mare. But
she is amazing. So, what happened yesterday?
Well, I went to some rodeos, and I kind of want to say I ruined my horse going to some rodeos, but I'm being sarcastic. But she started going past the first barrel. So, at 9 years old, this horse that was already a speed demon, she got faster. And I don't know if she got a little bit sore. I've done a lot of stuff to make sure that that is not there anymore and that. But she did run past the first barrel with me about three times, which three times is terrible. I went home, maybe make long story short. Now I am petrified of not doing her justice or having her not be herself. And so now I think I'm choking or panicking or something. But basically, she's running past the first barrel. And I don't mean slowly. She's flying by it. And so, and she's nine, and she's been perfect for. No horse is perfect, but if I've ever had one that was nearly perfect, it's been her. I mean, this mare basically trained herself, and I've hit a few barrels, but really she's never done anything much wrong. And so I'm at a loss as to why this happened, unless she got a little bit sore, which I think I've taken care of. But why, for whatever reason, now I kind of can't get past it. And so it's one thing for her to run past at a rodeo when the conditions aren't great. But yesterday, for her to do it here, it was heartbreaking.
So this is a challenge right now.
It's a challenge for me. And so, yeah, and I feel responsible. And I just, all I care about is that my horses get the credit they deserve. I don't care what, I know that's easy to say in a way, but really, it's not me, it's them. And so when I let them down, which is what I feel like now, I can hardly bear it. And so really, I almost loaded up and just went home because, you know, and I will. I still haven't decided if I'm going to run her again here today because I kind of think yesterday was me riding her bad. But I will say she ignored me a little bit too. And so she has, you know, she's done this about, I'd say probably that might have been the fifth time she's done that. Now, this is, for her to do it here was bad because I can't blame the rodeo scene. So anyway, I'm upset, and then in the other two barrels, I mean, she's like a one-handed ride, so I really kind of can't figure out what this is going on, and she's always been, when she was younger, I didn't even let her run, and she let me not let her run. Now, I mean, someone said, you flew her to the first barrel. I'm like, oh, I barely let go of her. There's no kicking that mare. That mare is flying when you release, you know, the release. And so now she's gotten just a little carried away going into the arena. I mean, the ground won't hold her up for one thing going that fast. I've got to get her reeled in a little bit too. So anyway, it's disturbing. Yeah. And it's not nothing easy about this job. And the other part of me is I got to try to sit in the middle of a horse that can run that fast and turn like she can. So there's just a little bit of fear going on in my mind.
I'm hoping that whoever's listening to this and has been in this position will say, hey, listen to Dina Kirkpatrick. She's been a world's champion going through this. I'm not so bad. I'm not the worst, because people tend to do that. They make a mistake and they feel bad. And they're like, I'm taking this on my self-esteem because I've made a mistake. And this is actually a message of encouragement, because when you're Dina Kirkpatrick, you know, what the heck? And even you are having this struggle.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, it actually encourages others that, you're all human. We're all going to go through this.
Yeah, we are all human, and the world isn't a perfect place, and this is not an easy event, and we love it, the event, and I will say it's gotten so tough, and I love a speed horse. I love a speed horse, and I love it that she's that fast, but I'm upset that I'm not helping her properly. So anyway, but yeah, it's definitely, I'm struggling, bottom line, so. Mm-hmm. I hope I get through it. By the grace of God, hopefully I'll get through it.
Well, there's a lot of us that wish we could struggle like you. Just but I just admire your humility. And
the great thing is she's mine and is always going to be mine. And so that I will say that. I remind myself that's your horse. whatever, you know, she's yours. And so, because when I rode for the public, you know, things were way more stressful. I'm stressed about it for my own sake, but bottom line, I only have to answer to me and God. But anyway, and I'm pretty sure he has more important things to worry about than my barrel horse running past first barrel. But anyway, so, but she is mine, and she'll always be mine, and I love her anyway. She's done so much. So, but I do, she hasn't had that many runs in her life. My sister, Terry, and I talk every day, and Terry's like, Dina, yes, she's nine, but she's about had the experience of a 5 or 6 year old, because I don't go that much. You know, so she hasn't had a ton of experience. So basically, she could just have the run hit her, and I just have to reel her in a little bit. So anyway.
So Sherry Servey, your best friend.
My best friend, yep.
You guys are like sisters.
Yep. Well, yep.
Basically.
She's 6 foot tall, and I'm 5 foot tall, but other than
So what advice did Sherry have for you?
Well, I haven't called her after yesterday, but Sherry
is. What would Sherry say?
She gets upset when things don't go perfect for her, too, so we kind of laugh about that. And she would say, you've talked me off the cliff, and now I'm going to talk you off the cliff. You know, and I will say the thing about the difference in us, she's the master of helping a horse keep their feet under them in bad situations. She's a master of that. And so I'm not sure she would be having this trouble if she were me. I'm pretty sure she had reeled it in before it happened. But anyway, she is super supportive in that, and I will be chatting with her.
How did you two become best friends?
You know, I don't know. Like, her dad and my father-in-law were friends back in the days of first junior rodeos and stuff like that. And then, her dad stopped in to see my in-laws a couple of times and that. And then we are sponsored by the same people. You know, right. She's with Martin and Classic Equine. And so when I came on board there, which is probably 10, 12 years ago, then we were around each other more. And I don't know. We just slowly became, like, super good friends. And anyway, she's the other person that I know that whose horse is more important to her.
I was gonna say it's the love, your passion,
yeah,
for your,
well, yeah,
your horses.
But the horse means more to her than getting her name in the paper. And so, yeah, she's probably the only other person other than my sister who I would let a horse go off with anywhere. But anyway, so we, you know, and she has tons of little animals and animal lover, and I have that. We have that kind of stuff in common. And anyway, I don't know how we became close friends, but she's good-hearted, and she gives great advice, and she's got more experience taking care of a horse and winning on him than anybody I know that I respect. I mean, I there's a lot of great people out there, but
I do feel that Sherry Servey is universally loved in this industry.
Yeah, she is, yeah. She's very, very, very sweet, and she's, anyway, yeah.
I can see why
she
is your best friend. I can see why you two are friends, because you're two of the most humble people. I remember a phone call that I got from you one time. There was something on Barrel Horse World that was, you know, talking about the great Sherry Servey, and Sherry heard about it. We had to take it down because she didn't want anybody bragging on her.
Yeah,
do you remember that? I don't know. If
oh
you
yeah,
that.
No, yeah,
like,
but
okay.
She, yeah,
but it's really nice. They're all talking about how wonderful she is, and Sherry's humble.
Yeah,
and like now
she
you
is.
Can't control any of that because Facebook, you can
yes,
say whatever
yeah,
you want.
You can't
but
control it. Yeah,
I was just struck by the humility of Sherry Servey.
She is very. She's very humble. So, and yeah, and we laughed about one thing. She does get as bent out of shape. She gets more bent out of shape if she hits a barrel. Like I'm, of course, if you do the rodeo thing, and so we've ridden together. Like she doesn't need my help anymore at all. But years ago, you know, when she was training her own horses, when she was younger, her dad bought some and that, and then she's training her own. And there were stages where we would ride together and be like, oh, okay, and they had all the right buttons, and we would ride together, and I would ride them, and we would talk about it. Well, when I'm at rodeos, you know, like when I had Kate, she would say, you need to take Kate so-and-so. She'd love that arena. Well, everywhere she told me to go, I won. But anyway, so you know, we have that, you know, that we talk back and forth about each other, too. But now she doesn't need any help from anybody. Well, we still have fun riding together. And that, but anyway, she's quite a cowgirl, and her horses, they're like family members. They mean a lot to her. So anyway, we have that in common. But anyway,
really interesting. Well, I suppose you probably need to go.
Probably I need to decide if I'm going
to
ride my horse or not.
Are you driving back tonight?
Nah, I don't know. I'm only 6 hours from home, so I'm sure they'll call me from home to see. So anyway, I'll decide if I'm going to attempt to do that again or not. So, yeah.
I appreciate the insight into the wonderful Dina Kirkpatrick.
Thank you.
And once this is off, then we talk politics.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Thank you. Google everybody, Dina Kirkpatrick, Celie Wickham Ray, Ian Francis, because if I talk about how great they are, Dina won't ever talk to me again. All right. Everybody have a great day.
You're in a state of I had been able to say more about Sherry, but I don't.
Hey, back again with Dina Kirkpatrick. I know we said goodbye, but we forgot the most wealth. I say we. Dina had something she needed to say.
I wanted to just emphasize more that from my what I feel about the horses is that I don't feel like I can take responsibility for the great horses I have had. I feel like they were gifts from God. And one of the things that I do always say about training a horse, and these are some old-time trainers said it, great horses make great trainers, not vice versa. And that's just one thing I like to always emphasize that. That's all I have to say about that.
If you were here, I wish you were. Dean and I have little tears in our eyes talking about these horses and God's grace.
Yep.
And, okay, now we got to go have a little cry and maybe drink some coffee.
Yep, okay.
Y'all have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye.
You've been listening to Barrel Talk Radio, sponsored by Barrel Horse World and two the very special gifts.
I haven't been to give this one. Can I cry over my horse?
Thanks for listening.
Oh, I know. It does bring tears to your eyes. Listening to this is a lot of it.